You're listening to the BBS Radio Network, and this is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Skycloud, healer, author, shaman, paranormal investigator. Stay tuned for Between Two Worlds.
Welcome, everybody. This is Derek White Sky Cloud. You're listening to Between Two Worlds on BBSRadio.com. Today we're going to have some. We're going to have a wonderful fellow coming calling. We're talking to him right now. He's actually in Russia, and this man is a paranormal investigator. Plus, he's written a book called Footprints in the Snow. And before I get started, I want to share some information for you ahead of time. I want to thank everybody out there that actually has supported me and my family when my father had passed July 21st, and I went to his memorial. I presided the service for him. I'd like to thank my family and my relatives for being there to support him, and also people that were friends connected to my father, and also my mother, because, again, they all talked highly about both my parents. And I want to acknowledge that one person in the background who has been listening to my show this last little while, an old friend of mine, someone who I've known for over 30 years, I want to say to this person, yes, I do believe in forgiveness. So I hope she's listening in, and I'm acknowledging her. So anyways, there has been some really outstanding things happening to me out in this area. So I want to share this story first, and if we got some time, we'll talk about it more, or else we'll talk about it next week. So I will tell you the story about this man. His name is Dr. J. Lee Charon, C-H-O-R-O-N. I believe that's actually how it's spoken. I will know when I ask this man if that's what his name is supposed to sound like. He's actually wrote the book called Footprints in the Snow and the Tales of the Haunted Russia. And this is the way the book is written as an intro. She is Mother Russia, the largest nation in the world, and her turbulent history has left her filled with restless spirits. Footprints in the Snow is a collection of true and documented stories of the paranormal from Russia and Eastern Europe. Excerpts are in shorter and less detailed form, and which have been published in numerous Russian and English language publications, primarily through the Ilya Resink Library Collection and in various local magazines and newspapers, along with such prestigious U.S. and U.K. publications. Also the magazine called Fate and Phenomenon. The stories of Haunted Russia is a reporter's view of documentable paranormal incidents. The stories are told through the eyes of a professional skeptic, one who does not see ghosts behind every tree. Statistically, more than 96% of all of us such stories turn out to be quite natural in the origin, and they are exceptions. The stories in this collection have all been thoroughly investigated and documented. Now, these are not the high-profile cases you hear about all the time. Most of them are little known outside their immediate area and only by the immediately involved. You will not find Ivan the Terrible or the Lost Princess Anastasia in these pages. This book, what he's written, this book has, these cases are basically been treated frequently enough already. What you will find are some documented and variable accounts of paranormal activity in this country that have so far defied any rational or normal explanation. They are interesting and informative reading and entertaining. These are true reports of actual happenings presented in a way that leaves it to the reader to decide the cause of these footprints in the snow. Now, Dr. Sherman, which tells his story, he says, my apartment building is located just across the street from the elementary school in the garden. Now, is Dr. Sherman there?
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Sherman. How are you doing?
Just fine. How are you? It's Corin.
Is it Corin?
It's Corin.
Corin. Okay.
My name is German, and the Corin. CH is pronounced
now,
like
you're
a
from
K.
Texas.
From Texas.
You're from Texas. Do you have a Texas accent, or are you still used to Russia now?
Well, you tell me. I don't know. I've been here for so long, people tell me both.
Okay, so you have a Texas accent, a Russian accent? So
Probably a combination.
Russia, or actually Texas, actually has some Russian names.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There were quite a few Russian immigrants that went to Texas in the last century.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'm going to share the story with the rest of folks, and then I'll have you step right in and say something else. How's that sound?
Okay.
I want to tell your story here so then the public will actually know what had happened. Basically, here in Russia, this is unusual. The school was part of Lenin's. Now, this is not John Lennon. This is actually the real Lennon. First five-year plan, and was one of the most successful parts. Now, late at night, long after the school is closed and completely empty, we can hear children laughing and playing in the playground. It lasts for about 5 minutes, a relatively long time, but when you look out the window, you can see nothing. There are no children there. Everyone in the building is used to this. It happens several times a year, and it's gone on for decades, as at least 50 years. Now, so has what follows. You, after about the 5 minutes, there is a high-pitched screeching sound, followed by an explosion, then sound of children playing turns to screams and then stops. Welcome to Russia, arguably the most haunted land on Earth. The stories that you are about to read in Footprints in the Snow have all been thoroughly investigated and documented. These are not the high-profile cases that you hear about all the time, which basically makes a lot of sense. Now, I want to ask you this question. When have you been to this place yourself? Have you actually heard the sounds of the children?
It's within 50 yards of my house.
50 yards of your house?
Yeah.
But you can still hear the kids play?
That was one of the first incidents that got me interested in putting this collection together.
So basically,
the high-pitched whistling sound is produced by an incoming mortar round.
Yeah.
Where we live is about 50 to 75 yards from what was the front lines during World War II.
Okay.
The Germans and the Red Army were fighting.
Okay.
The school is, half a mile or so away. Well, they were under orders to continue day-to-day life as normal, as everyone in the country was.
Uh-huh.
And during the fighting, somebody, they don't really know whether it was the Germans or the Red Army, somebody shot off a mortar round and it went wrong.
Now, what year do you think this took place?
This took place in 1941 or 1942.
So around the Second World War.
It was during the Second World War.
Okay.
And they hit, this mortar round hit school. It hit the playground.
So basically it sounds to me that it caught an ether of time, where it recorded itself consistently, because the children don't even know they passed away, so their energy is still in that ether.
Still there. It seems to be, this one seems to be what I would call, it's repetitive. It's not an active haunting.
Yeah.
It's like somebody putting a VCR tape into a machine and hitting replay constantly.
Yeah, like a recording. Okay.
It's just imprinted there.
Yeah, that's the people call imprints or recording. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I do it myself. I work as a paranormal investigator, and I find this absolutely phenomenal. I mean, a lot of people would always talk about, your most common people, a lot of war did take place in Russia. I know that because, you see a lot of movies, you read a lot of books, hear a lot of stories, you hear stories of what other people have gone through in the past. And there was a lot of violence in Russia that took place for many, 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 many years. Because it was all to do with, part of it was all control of lands or control of the people. It was more of the country itself I hard to explain that part. It's regimented. Does that make any sense at all?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We have had, as far as I can tell, four wars and five revolutions in this country in the last 175 years.
Wow.
So you can imagine the number of dead and the number of incidents that would arise out of this alone.
possibly look at hundreds of thousands to over 1,000,000
We're looking at hundreds
people.
Of thousands.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're looking at almost 60,000 people during the Second World War alone. 60 million, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
60 million.
Okay. So when you add that up, that's a lot. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
Okay. Now, to go further with this story, you also have, let's go to this part here. Other cases treated frequently enough already, which you will find are some documented verifiable accounts of paranormal activity. Let's see where we have here. Now, hopefully we'll be also entertaining to this part. Now, the part is, okay, okay, here it is. You're attending a quiet family picnic in the forest where a soldier of the Second World War lies in an unmarked grave and ill repose and cries out to a little child to find him. Stand in shock and awe as a tomb is opened after 76 years and the horrible cause of a woman's nightmares is found. You watch as the little girl plays at the feet of her aging parents half a century after her death and smile at the continuing presence of in spirit of the Countess, a little gray cat that never knew that she was a cat. Okay. That was good. Now, are there two individual stories in this one, or is there just one complete?
No, this is several stories.
Several stories, okay.
This is a summary of several of the stories.
Okay, now this little cat's called the Countess?
The little cat called the Countess, that's one of my favorite stories. I know these people personally.
Okay.
And did know the little cat. This happened back in the early 90s. The man, I'm not going to mention last names because of his occupation.
Yes.
But his name's Eager, and the woman's name is Irina. And they are a now elderly, childless couple. Years and years ago, they decided when they discovered that they could not have children, they wanted a pet.
Okay.
So he went to the veterinarian. Rode a motorcycle. They didn't even have money for a car. He was a very young lieutenant at the time. He rode a motorcycle. And he went to the veterinarians and asked if they had any dogs or cats to give away. And at that time, they had one little cat. It was a little gray cat that didn't even have its eyes open. It was the runt of the litter that had been abandoned, and the veterinarian told this man, yes, we have this one little cat, but it's not real likely it's going to live. Yeah, he said, I'll take it anyway. He wrapped the little cat up in an insulated handkerchief, put it in his jacket pocket. He opened the front breast pocket on his jacket and stuffed it down into his jacket pocket.
Uh-huh.
Folded the flap over, and they rode home on his motorcycle. The little cat opened its eyes. They fed it with an eyedropper.
Yeah.
And just hovered over the little thing day and night until it actually did open its eyes, and it got on its little feet. So the little thing never really knew it was a cat. And they started calling it the Countess because she thought she was people. She was not just people. She was an aristocrat.
Yeah, aristocrat.
You know, she had everything. You know, she was an aristocrat. She had everything. She had servants.
Really?
Well, anyway, the little cat was extremely bright. I've seen this myself. She did everything she learned from humans. She had never seen or been around a cat. So she learned to do things by watching people. I don't know if you've ever seen one or not. They've been out of fashion in the States for years. But there are still some flats here in Russia that have toilets. That have the overhead tank with the pull chain.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
the little cat... The little cat learned how to use the toilet. She would go to the toilet, sit on the edge, raise her tail, do her business. Then she would jump almost straight up, grab the end of the pool chain with both little front paws, swing down on it with all of her weight, and flush the toilet. The way she had learned by watching them. Eventually, he hung a tennis ball on the bottom of the pool chain so that she could grip it better. After he learned, after they caught her doing this. That's where the story gets interesting.
Wow.
The Countess finally died. She was an old cat when she died, kept by a pair of old people who had always treated her like a baby. Her little toys were everywhere. Her little her face was in every picture in the, you know, in the album and on the wall.
Yeah.
He talked about getting another cat for a little while. Of course, the wife wouldn't even hear of it. But it was just extremely empty around this place without the little cat. I mean, the little cat would still go for rides with him on the motorbike. He still had a motorbike, and the cat would still go for rides with him on a motorbike. She'd sit between his legs in the gas tank. You know, this kind of thing. Anyway, late one night, a month or so after the little cat died, about 2 o'clock in the morning, they're sound asleep, and the toilet flushes. Well, this wakes him up instantly. He reaches into the nightstand very quietly, takes out his pistol, cocks the pistol very silently. He's thinking, we've got a thief. Not only a thief do we have a stupid thief. He goes to the toilet door, kicks it open real suddenly, levels the gun. There's nothing there.
Oh.
Completely empty. He looks all around the flat, nothing. Well, he must have imagined it. So he goes back to bed, puts the gun back in the drawer, goes back to bed. The next night, it happened again. Goes through the same drill. Silently takes out the gun, cocks the gun, goes to the toilet, opens the door, switches on the light, nothing there. This went on several times. Finally, after several times this happens, he went back and went back to bed. Now, the little cat had one thing that was extremely interesting about her. She never learned how to go meow like a cat.
Oh.
She tried to imitate what people said. When she would meow, it would be broken up and stuttering like it was in sentences and words.
Oh.
It's hard to explain how it would sound, but it would be like meow, 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 meow. Like this, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a person talking, but she's meowing like a cat. But if you were around her a little while, you would learn to interpret what she's saying. Certain patterns had certain meanings. I want to play. I'm hungry. Take me outside. I love you, Daddy. You know, this kind of thing, okay?
Yeah.
These very simple little phrases that a little child might say. Anyway, after several times this happened, he finally just started ignoring it and thinking it was a dream. But it kept happening. He did it one more time. It happened. It stopped for a while. It happened one more time. He got up, went through the whole drill again, still couldn't find any sign of anyone in the flat. Put the gun away, and just as he was going to sleep, he felt something tugging at the blanket at the foot of the bed. And all of a sudden, he felt weight on the foot of the bed. And then he heard very distinctly the little cat in this pattern that she meowed in.
Yeah.
Say, I love you, Daddy.
Huh.
Now, and he replied like he always did, "I love you too, Countess." And then he rolled over and went to sleep.
He heard this after the cat passed?
I did not hear it. But I heard the cat do it many times.
Wow.
Before. So I knew what he was talking about.
Wow. Okay, now you also have another story here about the undefeated soldiers of the Legion of the Damned.
Oh, that's one of my favorite articles. That is ongoing, and that is not residual.
I mean, there's
that is
over
an active haunting.
Years.
That is an active haunting.
What war? When did this one happen? When did this take place?
1825. Hold on,
really?
Just a second. Hold on, just a second.
How many perished? Okay.
That it happened in 1825.
Okay.
During what is called the December Revolution, or the December Revolt.
Okay. You know how many actually passed through this one? How many people died during this one?
It's hard to determine because it was one of those things that just happened at the spur of the moment.
Okay.
But
in the larger part of the county of the country, or did it take place in the smaller area, the rural
literally across the entire country.
Really? Okay.
It takes place along a route of march that goes from St. Petersburg through Moscow, then turns northeast, goes through the Ekaterinburg Gap at the Ural Mountains, all the way out to Lake Baikal. That's about 6,000 miles.
Wow.
And there are sightings all along this route of march.
Now, is there a road sign there connected to it?
No, there's a railroad line in some places. There's roads in some areas.
Do you ever have hauntings or railroads as well that connected to that same thing?
No, not connected to that.
Okay, but you hear hauntings
on
trains?
But they do have hauntings on trains.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
But what happened, there were four regiments of the Imperial Army, four of the elite guards regiments that rose up against the Tsar. In December of 1825, they were trying to get the serfs freed and get land reform. Well, the rebellion was put down. But these guys wouldn't surrender.
Okay.
What they did, enough of them, enough to form a fighting regiment. And their dependents launched a fighting retreat across the Ural Mountains out into Siberia. They were retreating, but you know they were being pursued, and when they were pursued, they would turn and fight. They would leave segments behind to catch up with them and stall the enemy while the main body went on.
Wow.
They were hoping that they could get far enough out into Siberia that they would give up the pursuit, which they eventually did. But this particular case, there is about an understrength rifle company led by one officer and a baggage train, which is made up of push carts and hand-drawn carts. Women and children are sighted. Literally still marching to Siberia. And if they are sighted and you approach, the men will form up their ranks in perfect Napoleonic order with their muzzle-loading muskets and fixed bayonets, and they will fire on you. Now, it doesn't have any effect. This has happened to, oh my God, since the 1940s when they've been able to have substantiated reports and some documentation.
Okay.
Other than just tales, since the 1940s, it's happened about eight times. There have been isolated incidents when people would actually arrive in time to see this party as they march. And of course they'd send armed soldiers, because the report said there were armed soldiers in the area. They would send armed soldiers, and since these people were expecting to see armed soldiers pursue them, they'd turn to fight. Hold on just a second, please.
Yep. We're in a commercial. What we have here is there's something else I want to share with Dr. Sharon, is also we talk about the drummer boy of Teratoka. Now, that one also is interesting, where a young boy actually is, basically we're talking about the staccato leaving, the sound effects of staccato notes of a drum in the distance. Wonder what that one's all about.
Sorry, my wife was leaving for work.
Sorry?
My wife was leaving for work.
Oh.
I had to lock the door.
So I just basically said, okay, this is a commercial.
anyway,
well, I was actually just mentioning, too, something else on top of this was the same similar stories. You're talking about the drummer boy of Terekovka. Now,
That's another one that's very close to me.
Okay.
That's the next little town down the railroad line.
Okay.
Now, we use a commuter train here. I don't drive. I lost an eye some years ago, and I can drive, but I don't like to.
Okay.
I don't have much depth perception. So we use the commuter train. And that's the next little town up the line on the commuter train going to Moscow. We're about 25 miles from Moscow.
Okay.
So it's a 40 minute train ride. You can actually get there faster on the train than you can drive. But this is one of the stories that I found out about personally. There is a school there. It's one of the very first. When Tsar Nicholas, the last Tsar, began the education reform program here, right after he became Tsar in the 1880s or 1890s, I can't remember off the top of my head which, but very late in the last century, late in the 19th century.
Okay.
It was one of the schools that he built. Now, keep in mind, at this time, it was male only. There was no co-educational facility in Russia. And at the time, the idea of public education was new in Russia. Less than 5% of the population was literate.
Yeah.
So this was a big new project, and it was something that people were behind. Of course, the idea for the school was to produce literate male students that would make good army officers. Because this was the Victorian era when everyone was into colonization and this kind of thing.
Yes.
Well, of course, the original building was made out of wood. And it was the school, and then they had a barracks building where the boys actually lived. And you know what a three-story building looks like, with a long building with a hallway, a toilet at each end, and rooms on either side of the corridor, where you would have 2 to 4 boys in a room. First, second, third, fourth class in first, second, third, fourth order of rising up how many stairs you got to walk down.
Yeah.
With the lower classmen at the top having to walk down the most steps. Well, the building, one of the kids there, one of the younger students, in the first class, was one of the drummer boys. And being in the first class, he hadn't learned really how to drum. They had certain calls that they used on the drums, and they were used for signals in the army.
Yes.
So you had reveille, you had taps, you had mess call, you had, you know, everything. Well, the only thing this child had learned so far was the mess call. You know, the one time to go and eat. Sometime in the middle of the night, the building caught fire. Now, back then, fire was a huge threat because there wasn't any mechanized firefighting equipment.
Yeah.
It was basically a bucket brigade, and you didn't have much luck. The building caught fire, and the fire started to spread. This kid was up on top, so the smoke and the heat rising from the fire woke him up. He was the first one to wake up. When he looked out into the hallway and saw smoke coming up the corridor well, he pulled on his pants, grabbed his drum, and did the only thing he knew to wake people up and warn them about the fire. He started banging his drum and running down the halls. Up the stairs, down the stairs, up the corridor, down the corridor, up the stairs, down the stairs, you know, back and forth until all of these kids got up and got out. But he didn't get out. The roof collapsed before he could get out.
So basically,
when the fire died out,
he
had found his body, and they found the drum.
Yeah.
And they buried him. Even the Tsar came from Moscow and hung a decoration on the tombstone. You can go to this place now and see this tombstone still standing in the grounds of what is now a new school.
Oh. Okay.
And the people of the town take care of it. They maintain this little grave. Oh.
So when he plays his drum, if there's ever a fire, you hear a drum in the distance?
What happens in town is, if there is a fire in the night,
you will
hear the drum.
Really?
You will hear the
his
drum.
Ghost, his spirit carried it on, replication of it.
This is not a repetition. This is an active haunting.
Oh, active haunting.
It does not happen unless there is a fire.
Oh, okay. If there is
a fire in town, you will hear the drum. It will be loud enough to wake everyone up. Each person will hear this drum loudly enough to wake up, and it wakes up the fire department, too.
Makes a lot of sense.
He is actively still trying to protect his town.
That's good. That's actually very interesting, because actually there is a story of a, I'm not sure if you know about this story, but actually one I know of, taken in the UK, and they talk about this famous painting of a child that cries, and every time this child that has tears, and apparently whenever a building burns down, and if this child is this particular painting is ever in this building, everything else burns except the painting. And they, in the end, they try to burn the painting. They couldn't burn the painting. It was just
I've heard that.
For some reason the fire would go out.
I've heard that. Where I work. Worked in the UK for a while with when I was with the Kodak company. I flew in and out of UK because our overseas branch headquarters was there. I've heard that story.
Yeah,
it's an amazing place. It's like Russia. It is so old, and the culture is so old.
Let's talk about something that's like here's one here. We talk about the most blatantly evil men in the world.
Nikolai Ishov.
I'm sorry, what was his name?
There's even Nikolai Ishov. Nikolai
yeah.
Ivanovich Ishov. There's even a period in Russian history that's named after him.
What's it
called? The Yuzhovchina. It's called the Yuzhovchina.
It's the inner circle of hell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's a different guy.
I'm thinking of Solomon.
That's a different story. The inner circle of hell is a different. The one about the Thomas is a different story. That was about Lavrenty Beria, and he was almost as bad as Ishov.
Okay.
He was actually an improvement over Ishov, but he was almost as bad.
What was what was their evil side? What was so important about them that made him so bad?
Basically, they were completely about Ishov.
Yes.
He was a psychopath. basically a psychopath and a sociopath.
Was he a politician?
Who was appointed to be head of? I'm serious. He was diagnosable.
But was he a politician?
He was diagnosable as a psychopath and a sociopath.
Okay.
But he was appointed to be head of the NKVD by Stalin.
Oh my God.
Because he was completely devoid of feelings to the point that he could carry out these purges, these tremendous purges and internal cleanings that Stalin wanted done.
Was he like
literally ordered millions of people executed, and it had no effect on him. He had no feeling at all.
Yeah. Was he like?
They called him the man with the empty eyes.
Was there someone like, hey, remember we talked about Rasputin in the past? People always talk about Rasputin. Was he that bad, or was this guy even worse than Rasputin?
This guy was even worse.
Okay.
This guy literally was responsible for millions of deaths. They called him the man with the empty eyes. He is the man that really built the Gulag.
Oh.
Now, let me explain what Gulag is. Gulag is not a word. It's an acronym.
Okay.
When you see it in Russian, it is a capital G, small U, capital L, and a small AG. It stands for Государственный лагерь. That means government camp.
Like a style camp.
It's a concentration camp.
Okay, it's like you're German, like a German camp, the same way.
Yeah, it's basically a concentration camp.
Okay, yeah.
But Gulag is not properly a word. It's an acronym.
Yeah, okay.
Now, Yezhov is the guy that actually built this system. It's credited to a couple of men that were earlier than him, but they didn't actually do it. It was credited to them in order to make him look a little more reputable while he was still in, while he was still holding his position. So they shoved the blame off on people who were already dead. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's the one that actually built the Gulag up, and he's the one that was responsible for, I'm going to say between 25 and 30 million deaths.
Whoa? Did it again?
Between 25 and 30 million.
He was responsible for all that, the amount of people that died.
You've heard about the Great Famine in the Ukraine?
Yes.
Where millions and millions of people died from deliberate starvation.
Yes.
That was one of Yezhov's operations.
Wow. Now, is he one of the hunters?
He was the one. You've seen all the old, the old B-grade movies from the 50s, the bad ones, where they knock on your door at 3 o'clock in the morning, this is the NKVD, open the door, you have serious troubles.
Yes.
Under him, it was no joke, and it was no bad movie. It was a bad dream. It was a very bad dream.
Oh.
You disappeared. You never were seen again.
Was he under Stalin's rule?
He was under Stalin. He was the third director of NKVD, and he was the first one under Stalin.
They made a movie about Stalin, and they tried to make it as close as possible to realism of it. And they also
worked
made another
in that movie.
Called Archangel. There was actually a town called Archangel.
Archangel.
They tried to replicate it to the story. I'm not sure if it was a true story or not, but someone tried to replicate it to what they're believing that Stalin had a son, an illegitimate son. Is that true? Do you know anything about that one at all?
Yeah. I didn't work on that film. I worked on the other Stalin film, the one that Robert Duvall played Stalin in back. In the 80s.
You were working on that one?
Yeah, I worked on that film. I was one of the technical advisors.
Whoa. Excellent. Yeah, I've seen that one. It was actually quite... It got my attention. I'm telling you, it was... I can't believe how really some of these guys act in countries that try to rule or control. And
you understand then who this Tiberius is.
Republic never fought back to really take their country back.
They couldn't. Once they... It's difficult to explain.
Yeah.
But nobody, when the revolution came in 1917, people think that everyone supported the Bolsheviks and everyone loved the communists and Lenin. That's not true. the communists and Lenin made up a minority of the revolution.
Okay.
Around 3 to 5%. The difference between them and the other bunches was they were organized. They had a good, solid organization, and they could lead. They knew how to lead. Nobody particularly loved them. Most people didn't have much use for them at all.
Yep.
But on the other hand, they literally despised, loathed, and detested the Tsar. Nobody cried when the Tsar was executed. There was literally dancing in the street when they found out he was dead. Now, the story about his, you know, all the pity and misery when they found out that the Tsar had been killed is nothing but a fantasy.
Yep.
When it happened, there was dancing in the street. The story about how it was so terrible has come up over the years by the expat community. Now, there was mourning about the family. Nobody wanted the family to be killed, okay?
Yes.
And everybody thought that was terrible. But as far as Nicholas was concerned, they were glad he was dead. And anything that followed him would be seen as an improvement. So that's how the communists got into power.
Now, what about Saul Sinitsyn? What was he so, make him also consider the inner circle of hell? He was connected to that. Is he very...
Okay, Saul Sinitsyn, you have to take anything he writes with a grain of salt.
Yes.
As far as being terribly actual is concerned. Yes, what he wrote is true. But it is exaggeratedly bad as far as it's related to what happened to him.
Okay.
He makes what happened to him sound terrible, okay?
Was he the one that...
Trust me, what happened to him was nothing.
Was he the fellow that went missing after his death?
No. Solzhenitsyn is still alive. He's still alive, well, and a professional malcontent.
Okay, there's someone I know. I thought there was somebody else. I remember now. There was actually one person in Russia I heard about that went missing, and that he haunts the greater part of Russia. Now, I don't remember his name.
I'm trying to remember the name, too, and I can't. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and he went missing for the longest time, and some people believe he's still alive. Some people believe he's dead. And also, this person actually was one of the czars. Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? Remember someone talked about Anastasia? That's what it is, Anastasia. Where her father went missing, or supposedly got missing, or they were tortured or taken away and disappeared. That's probably what I'm thinking about.
Well, now her father, the czar, the last czar's family was exterminated. They were shot.
Yeah. Okay.
The whole family was shot.
Okay.
But that's not something that's part of this collection, but it's something that it's an interesting story.
Yes.
The execution of the Tsar's family was by accident.
What?
It was not intended to happen.
Oh, so misinformation.
What happened was this. At that time, Russia was in a civil war. We had the Red Army and the White Army. The White Army was the monarchist and the anti-communist factor, okay?
Okay.
At the time, the Red Army, the communists, were in charge. They held the Tsar and his family as prisoners. What they were trying to do was negotiate with England. You know, the Tsar was the first cousin of the King of England and the German Kaiser, okay?
Yeah.
They were negotiating with England to release, to give them the Tsar and the Tsar's family in return for recognition of communist Russia and a huge amount of foreign aid. Now, this was a consortium of Lenin, Sverdlov, Dzerzhinsky, and I think Trotsky were behind this, okay? Anyway, the Civil War was going on, and they were having to move the Tsar and his family to avoid them being captured again by the other side, which would kill their chances of sending him to England in return for recognition and foreign aid. So every time the White Army would advance, to a point where it looked like they might get their hands on the Tsar and his family again, the people guarding the Tsar had orders, under no circumstances are you to allow the Tsar or the royal family to fall into the hands of the enemy. Now, that's what the order stated, exactly word for word. Under no circumstances are they to be allowed to fall into the hands of the enemy. Now, it was understood by Lenin, Trotsky, and Sverdlov that any moron who read this would understand that it meant retreat. Go somewhere else. Take him away from there, because everybody knows we're trying to negotiate this deal.
Yeah.
They got caught in Ekaterinburg when the town was surrounded. This guard detail with the Tsar. The leader of the guard detail apparently wasn't very bright. And he lingered too long and got caught in an encirclement. It looked like for about a week that the White Army would take the town. And there was no way the Red Army could break through this circle and reinforce them. So he reads the orders, under no circumstances are you to allow the Tsar or his family to fall into the hands of the enemy. And had them shot.
Wow.
A few days later, the Red Army did break through the encirclement and the town never fell. When the word got back to Moscow that this guy had had the Tsar shot, and the family, and these millions and millions of pounds worth of foreign aid and recognition all fly out the window at once. Lenin, Trotsky, Sverdlov, and Dzerzhinsky were running over themselves to see who could find the people to go out there and shoot this guy.
Huh.
You know,
yeah.
Just go out and get rid of him. Don't
now
let him foul the air anymore.
Called Angel of the Morning, which is spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Now, that's
yeah.
The morning as...
And that's the correct... That's what I intended to spell.
Okay.
That's the way I intended to spell it.
Now, this is supposed to be a story about a young girl.
That's the story of a young girl who was killed in a car accident.
Yes. How is she responsible for this particular area? Which area is she at now that she's seen?
This is in my own area.
Okay.
Several of these stories are from my own area.
Boy, you've got a haunted neighborhood.
Well, no, it's pretty constant everywhere. It's pretty constant all over the country. These are just typical stories.
Wow.
The girl
so
was
we
killed
here,
in a car
accident. We have to go travel
trying
to find the paranormal, and it's in your neighborhood.
Well, the thing is, there's an openness here that you don't see in the States.
Yeah.
Now, I'm gonna take a little diversion here and explain something else that you need to know about this place. And it's something that I wish I would see take hold in the States.
Okay.
There are two things that are essential to understand in reading this book. First of all, people in Russia take the paranormal seriously. It is a serious study. It is not fringe science. They do talk about it. They do make legitimate reports to the authorities. And the authorities, that is the police, the security agencies, the medical authorities, the fire people, and the media, that's how I got involved in it, will investigate these reports.
Do they have a paranormal investigation team that work with the police?
There are paranormal investigation teams all over Russia, and yes, we all do work with the police.
Okay, so you're working with the police yourself?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so...
We get some, my group gets some of our best reports.
How many
some
years,
of our
how
best
many
leads from the military and the police.
How many years have you been doing paranormal work?
Oh, God, when haven't I been?
As a profession, then.
when haven't I... Oh, about 25 years as a profession or semi-profession.
Okay, so...
25 or 30 years.
Now, you state here, now, basically, in your writing here, it says you're not, at first, really, as a paranormal, or I guess call yourself a psychic medium and all that, but you are, actually, you have a PhD in optical engineering.
I'm an optical engineer.
Photo Allen as reporter and journalist. You're a professional skeptic. That's cool.
You have to be. That's the other thing I was going to say.
I see ghosts. You trying to find what really is for real and what is not.
And what is not. That's the whole point of what Russia believes in the paranormal.
Okay.
The Russian definition of paranormal is what makes all the difference. In Russia, the paranormal is defined as that which demonstrably exists but lies outside what is considered normal for the society and culture that surrounds it.
Now
do you see the
sure
difference
public
between that definition and the one used in the States?
Yes.
We don't believe it's a cult. We don't believe it's supernatural. We believe that it has a perfectly natural and normal explanation that we simply do not understand.
A lot of people don't.
So it is a legitimate field of exploration and investigation. When we hear something, quote, defies the law of whatever, unquote,
yeah,
the first thought that enters our mind is, we don't understand the law completely.
Out of all these investigations, which do you find the most intriguing to you?
That's hard to answer.
Okay, let's put it this way.
There are two of them.
The scariest one.
The scariest one?
Yeah.
Empty eyes.
Empty
and
eyes.
It's not scary because of what's actually happening, because what's happening is a residual haunting.
Okay.
There's no interaction. What's scary is the place where it happens, coupled with what is happening, makes it scary. I have not had any really scary investigations. We've seen very few, very very few that are actually scary. In most cases, there's no intent to be scary. It's more of an intent to gain attention.
Exactly.
And it turns out it's scary only because it's unexpected.
Yeah. We always have that. We always have that fear factor in us.
The our own fear is what makes it scary.
Yes.
But what's intriguing to me is there's really probably two of the stories. One of them is called Our Little Hero, and the other one is called Horatio at the Bridge.
We won't be able to do the whole story on these two because we're almost coming to a close. But what I want to say is thank you very much for being on this show. I mean, this is totally phenomenal. I'm just asking questions, and the hour has gone by so fast. Because I was going to ask you more questions regarding if you're using any EVP machines, other.
Oh yes, we have access, and that's something that's fun for us because we have access to equipment.
Now, do you have a website of your own?
Most people don't have.
Do you have a website of your own setup?
No, I do not. I am not computer literate. I'm basically a writer.
Okay, so your writings, now you can be found. You do have your book out there. It's called Footprints in the Snow. And
Tales of Haunted Russia.
It's available from Amazon. Amazon,
Barnes and Noble.
Book.
Lightning Source,
okay.
Any bookstore.
And also we have Zumaya Publications.
It can be gotten directly from the publisher.
So the book is $14.99, United States. $14.99,
but right now Amazon has an introductory offer on it, and it's 30% off.
Wow!
Until the offer expires.
Got to take advantage of this, folks. You have to listen to. You have to really get a hold of this book. It's totally phenomenal. Because when I was reading some of this, getting into the story, it just draws you right inside. You feel like you're part of that. And, Doctor, I'd like to really thank you very much for being on the show. I want to get you back here again on the show.
I want to thank you for
having
me. Talk
about more because, you know, we only barely just touched the round edge of the bucket here. Because there's so much that you can fill in the stories and tell your story. Would you be interested in coming back again?
Oh, of course. I'd love to.
Okay.
I've got, since the collection came out, I probably got, since the manuscript was submitted, I've got enough material for a sequel.
Well, folks, if you guys want to listen, I'd like to thank everyone on the chat lines that are here listening into the show. Also, those who are actually listening to the radio show itself, please give me a call, or if you want to ask more questions regarding about your doctor here, Dr. Lee Schoen. I'm sorry, I have to say this again to spell it correctly. Did I say it correctly? Your last name was?
Corin.
Corin. Oh, man.
Corin.
Without the H. Corin. Dr. J. Lee Corin. Next week, we're going to, I'll be doing mediumship messages next week for you folks, so if you guys are willing to come back on and call in questions for the next following week, we'd love to have you come on. Doctor, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been absolutely fabulous having you here and just letting you just roll with us. Especially if we're talking to you in Russia, this is absolutely great for me, because I've never talked to anybody in Russia before, so it's my honor to have a chat with you.
So right. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Okay. Thanks very much. Take care. Take care, folks. We'll talk to you next week. And in the meantime, between time, this is Derek WhiteSkyCloud on Between Two Worlds on bbsradio.com. Look forward to having a chat with you next week. And if you guys have any questions you want to find about to order the doctor's book, go to my website on bbsradio.com on Between Two Worlds. You see his page listed on my page, and you can look it up. Click on that page, and you'll find his book. You can order that. So take care, guys. It's been wonderful to have you listening in. I'll talk to you next week. Take care. Bye.